Welcome back, everybody, to Dress Down. Today, we have a very exciting guest. Today, we have someone who's on the other side of the industry, both a content creator himself and also a creator manager for musical artists, cosplayers, and more, and also the CEO of 257 Records and DigiCult Creators, Ursus Magana.
Magana.
Ursus Magana. And also might say something that may or may not get me canceled today. We'll see.
Well, I had PR training before coming here.
Okay.
Yeah, and by that, I mean, I watched a couple TikTok videos.
Oh, yeah.
On like PR training.
Perfect. Well, welcome. Thank you for being here.
No, thanks for inviting me. I never thought I'd be invited again after that one time, you know?
Yeah. After the incident?
After the incident, yeah. And for those that don't know, we did record two podcast episodes with Daniel and another podcast we were involved with. And the first podcast had an incident, so we tried again. And that was pre my PR training. So now I'm trying my best here.
That's true. It was for Take a Bite,
Take a bite,
Raven's podcast. I did a whole episode and you guys were like, actually, you got to come back.
You got to come back.
We got to redo it. What happened? What was wrong?
You know, we'll have to say in the Patreon.
Oh, okay.
The Patreon portion of this.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. We'll wait. Well, welcome. For anyone who doesn't know you, can you tell me about your background and what you do? And also, I'm very excited to talk to someone who is a little bit more behind the scenes to get a little insight of what creator management is like and what they're looking for in creators and stuff like that.
Got you. Well, my background is that I'm basically a metalhead that never made it. So I wanted to be in a metal band. I thought that was the way out of poverty. And I was outside of the Glass House one day, which is like this venue in Pomona, and I was the annoying kid that would wait outside the tour buses to try and talk to bands.
Mm-hmm.
I was that kid. And I was waiting outside of a bus, and the manager came out storming out, and he was screaming. He was like, it's only $100,000. That's all. That's all we're making this year. And I have a kid coming up. Like, this dude was having a whole meltdown. And right then and there, this is 15 years ago, maybe. That gives away my age. Yes, I am unk. But I was basically like doing the math, and he was like, wait, it's 100K. So it's like five dudes in the band, and it's the manager, and then they got to pay for this tour. And I was like, yo, my heroes are making like less than minimum wage. Like,
mm-hmm.
What's going on? You know, so I switched up my whole thing in college. I crashed a bunch of film classes to not lose my music scholarship. And I fell in love with film. From there, I got an internship at this branding photography studio called Slick Force Studio in LA. They were the guys that did the Skechers ad when Kim Kardashian did the Skechers that make you lose weight. And, you know, they allegedly didn't. Just so you could kind of like place where that was my first Hollywood experience. So I'm 17. I'm in college taking the train to this, to this internship. And I gave it my all, I guess. And then from there, I fell into the YouTube world because this agency, when we were doing, you know, all this production, I was doing the behind the scenes, I was editing, and that's when I started uploading. And fortunately, that led me to a YouTube agency called Full Screen. Some of the big names from that agency were like the Shane Dawsons of the world, like the FaZe Clans, like early YouTube. And once that company sold, I had the brilliant idea of taking TikTokers and musicians and taking TikTokers and making them musicians, and they all shit the bed, all of them. Yeah. So at the time, yeah. So it was called Musical.ly. Musical.ly got bought by TikTok. And during that time, I was just like infatuated with like how I was going to these parties, like these, you know, creator parties. And I was just like, how do these people know the song if it's not on the radio? Like, that makes no sense. How do these people know the song if the song's not big on YouTube? And that's when people were saying this is a TikTok song. And I was like, yo, this is the future. But I failed. And fortunately, some of those people, they wanted to do YouTube management, which I had already been a YouTube manager forever. And then some people wanted to do OnlyFans, which I didn't know what that was. I was like, yo, what is this? So fortunately, like with all the like marketing strategies and all the creator strategies that we that we had, it just kind of ended up working out. The world closed and everybody started printing money, and now we're here.
But now we're here. Yeah,
but I like to just say that, yeah, like at the end of the day, I'm just a metal kid, or like a pop punk kid that never made it, and now we fell into this.
But you made it in other ways. I feel like that's doing a disservice to you.
Yeah, it's just a good way to place it, just because like we, you know, even when with the explosion of like our success or whatever, it was very alternative. Like we did have some hip hop acts. My other business partners who are geniuses, like they're more into like the traditional hip hop, and we did have like one or two. But what made us really different when the world closed and nobody really knew like how to promote stuff from your bedroom, it was that we had such a big network in the alternative space. So, you know, naturally when you're like in the metal scene, you know, all those tattoo girls end up being suicide girls, their boyfriends end up being emo rap producers, barbers, CrossFit guys, or MMA guys. And so like all those dudes kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so we all just kind of end up working in the same thing together. And then it's like, hey, like, you know, my friend is on OnlyFans. Oh, my friend's a TikToker, you know, and we're talking 2020, like nobody knew what the fuck a TikToker is, you know, like nobody wanted to be called that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think it's cringe now, like, I mean, you remember it was the lip syncing video, this lip syncing era and all that stuff was like beyond cringe.
Yeah, but yeah. It worked.
No, it definitely did. It definitely did. I mean, looking back now, I mean, we're going to have to really study that, dude.
Mm-hmm.
It just the framing, the way that it was all just so two dimensional. We were basically like, you know, minds in a screen is just amazing. It's just hilarious.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you have two companies. Mm-hmm. One is for music and one is creator management, right?
Yeah.
What is your biggest musical inspiration? What metal and punk bands were you listening to when you were growing up?
That's funny. So my mom was like a big metalhead growing up. She like saw, you know, like Bon Jovi and like Guns N' Roses, Metallica, like all those, like, mm-hmm. I guess like the 80s, you know. So I grew up in the house listening to salsa, cumbia, and like metal. That's mm-hmm. like what was basically in the household, but not like Slayer. I think I discovered Slayer on my own. It was mainly hair metal, so like, you know, the dudes with the makeup and the hair and all of that. So
mm-hmm.
I didn't know this until I grew up that like Poison was kind of one of the like really commercial bands that people hated, because to me they were like the coolest band, because that's like what I knew when I was like five, you know.
Yeah
So like Poison was super cool to me, and then it wasn't until I was like a teenager that I realized like, oh, like Poison used to get made fun of a lot, or like Motley Crue used to get made fun of a lot, right? So like to me those were like the metal gods until I discovered like my own metal. And in LA, like, I grew up in Long Beach, so like LA, East LA got kids, and Long Beach kids would sometimes like intermingle at shows. And that's when I found like all those like heavier thrash metal kids. And then once I moved to Pomona was just this mecca of hardcore metalcore music that was brewing up at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So like some of the IE bands that were big during my era were like Winds of Plague, Suicide Silence, Destruction of a King. So for the five people that know those bands, like that that's basically where you could kind of like pin me, but that's the kind of the scene I grew up in. So mm-hmm. you know, we would play shows in high school, like we would play shows every other weekend, and you know, we would knock on doors and get people to let us use their backyard, or like there was always somebody that we could use, you know, their mm-hmm. backyard. And so that's kind of the, I guess, the scene that I grew up in. And so like what inspired me the most, I just wanted to belong, you know, like I loved Poison, but I kind of had to hide that, like, that's my heart, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pretend like I liked the really hard shit.
Yeah.
So to fit in with like the scene, I actually did end up getting inspired by bands that were coming up at that time. So definitely my biggest inspiration at that time in high school was Winds of Plague. And it felt mm-hmm. very reachable, like mm-hmm. like, oh my God, they're in the area, and this scene that's kind of unknown is blowing up, and it's something that you could do. And I tell this to musicians all the time. It's like sometimes there are musicians that make music for musicians. So there's music fans that they passively just listen to music while they do their work or while they work out. And then there are actually music fans that it's their dream to try, but they never could. And so I feel like for me, that's what Winds of Plague was for me, that it felt realistic. They were from California and everybody knew someone that knew them. So it felt just so realistic, and I could do it. And that's one of the successes of TikTok, is that when people are making music on TikTok and people feel like, hey, I could dance to this shit. Mm-hmm. Hey, I could recreate the sound. Hey, I could, you know, I could put my cosplay onto this shit. And in a way, essentially, like the mystery and the thing that TikTok had that all these other social medias didn't have was that it kind of made everybody feel part of it.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, that was a big rant to say. Yeah, Winds of Plague was a big inspiration of mine, but they're kind of relatively unknown, you know?
Yeah. I've never heard of them, but I am an East Coaster. So
okay.
If they were in California.
Yeah. So maybe that's why. In the East Coast, I'd say a lot of like the UK bands that were coming up at the time were big. So like Bring Me the Horizon. Are you familiar with them?
Definitely familiar with Bring Me the Horizon.
So Bring Me the Horizon. Those dudes came from the UK and they were really inspired by the scene that I'm talking about. But they're a little bit younger than them, but Bring Me the Horizon has obviously crossed to this like super, you know, I wouldn't say that they're super mainstream, but they've crossed the mainstream from time to time. And so, yeah, so think Bring Me the Horizon, but like older Bring Me the Horizon when they were like kind of like more metal instead of more singy.
Yeah.
Which both are fucking awesome. And I love Ollie. I love I mean, I'm a super glazer of him. but the point is that he was very inspired by like the brewing up of the metalcore scene in MySpace. And that's where I was at. So the in MySpace, if you liked the alternative music, you were either into like the Jeffree Star side of stuff, like kind of like scene core.
Broken side.
Yeah, exactly. Broken side. Shout out to Mike. I just talked to Mike this week.
Really?
He's super sweet. Yeah, I love him so much.
And, I have a broken side story.
Really?
Kind of.
We should go see them.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah. They're here next week. We should go.
Oh yeah? Yeah.
Oh wait, you're gonna be in Germany.
I am gonna be in Germany.
Yeah, they have a show here in the Whiskey Go-Go with Filth, and I was just talking to him about going. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they're awesome. But yeah, so basically at the time, MySpace, right? Like you're basically getting fucking groomed by older women and men in MySpace. You're 13. And you know, they're constantly trying to get you to join their cosplay communities. That's how I got my first girlfriend, you know, like I was Naruto number 86 and like and I was like one boyfriend of like many Narutos. But on the side, that was my thing on the side. I was in these anime community like LARPing pages, but then I had my metal profile where I was this tough, like hard, like you know, Mexican kid, whatever. And so during that time, it was like you're either into like the scene core stuff, you're either into like deathcore, metalcore, or the thrash metal, which are like those dudes that would dress kind of like the Stranger Things cool guy, you know, the guy with the mullet.
Yeah.
Picture him. So that's what the thrash guys in LA dressed like. They had like a mullet, they had like the white Reeboks from like the 80s, and they listened to like Slayer and like slam bands. And then you had the metalcore guys. And so long story short, Ollie and them, they made music. They hated their music. They were like, yo, this is garbage. But but they were like, you know what, like there's nothing to lose if we put it up on MySpace. And Bring Me the Horizon actually ended up crushing on MySpace.
Oh yeah.
And so they blew up in the East Coast first, and then they got bigger in the US, and then I think they got bigger everywhere else in the world. But
how do you feel about A Day to Remember?
I love them. I love them.
I knew we got along.
Yeah.
That's my favorite band.
No way.
Yeah, but I'm from Ocala.
Okay. No, so I love
it. It's a must.
Dude, I love them. I've been to like two big shows when they were like A Day to Remember. Like, let's go.
I was at the Ocala skate park where they filmed that video while they were filming.
No way.
It. Yeah, I'm in the crowd. I don't think you can see me, but I am in the crowd.
That's crazy.
In the downfall of us all. Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, yeah. So basically that's the type of band that I thought I would be a millionaire with. And then come to find out, I realized like the biggest guys in that scene, like they were all struggling, and I was just like, fuck, like I really gotta figure out this camera.
You gotta pivot. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta So my dumb idea was like, yo, if I start filming these guys and making music videos for them, maybe that's a way. And obviously that wasn't it either, but you know.
But it led you
down the path to now, exactly.
So when you are, because you have a a management company for both music and creators. What do you look for when you choose to work with somebody who does music versus regular content creation, and does it overlap?
Right. So in music, we're no longer really managing. That was like a really tough lesson that, you know, I think everybody, and I guess I'll get more into like the weeds of the music stuff, but everybody kind of knows, at least now, that like management is essentially a lose-lose for the most part as a manager. For those that don't know, I'll just kind of like do like really simple examples, but essentially, you know, you find an artist, and I'll give you the best case scenario, okay? Best case scenario, this person's your friend, maybe you grew up with them, and you guys have like an inner loyalty for each other, and no matter what, you know, you guys make it through and through. And there are people that exist like that. Like, shout out to, you know, Vaughn, who manages and works with Young Gravy. Like, they've known each other since they were like 10 years old, right? So like, no matter what, I don't think an asteroid can separate those two dudes, you know? Like, I admire their relationship. But for the most part, when you enter this business, you either know what you're doing because you worked for an agency or a good manager before, or you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so in both of those scenarios, it still doesn't matter. The destiny is usually the same, where when the artist gets big enough, they will squeeze you out. And it's nothing against them. And it's nothing. This isn't like a narrative of like all artists are evil. Ah, it's just that the business, think of it as like an independent business. It gets so big that, you know, they will always think that the grass is greener on the other side. And so when you're managing the artist, you don't necessarily own any of the business with them unless they make you a business partner. And that might sound really like predatory and like vulturish, but the thing is that the manager never really has protection there. So a good example is like, you know, Chapel Roan. And I have nothing against Chapel or their team or whatever, but this is like a very public thing that happened recently. So Chapel, for example, a lot of people see her as a new artist, right? So she got crowned New Artist of the Year, like I think a couple years ago. Chapel Roan's been doing music for almost a decade. She was signed to Atlantic. I think she got dropped from Atlantic, which is like a big major record label. She went back home. I think she had like a normal job at one point. The manager stuck through the whole thing. He believed, what have you. I think somewhere along the line, we don't necessarily know how it happened, but she got put on Olivia Rodrigo's tour through him. That was one of the things that really ignited like a big spark. And then obviously she's super fucking talented and she's amazing, whatever. The point is that you could be that guy that has the one. Chapel Roan is the one. She is that good. She's incredible. And she works really hard. And she has the talent. And you could stick through all the downs. And he got let go last year. And so that's an example of stuff that we've had to learn. Because, you know, we were kids. And, you know, whether the major label squeezes you out because you're just some kid, or whether the artist wants to explore, you know, what it would be like to be part of the machine. Unless you are part of the machine, or you work for the machine, even if you work for the machine, like in the Chapel example, it's still gonna happen where at some point they're gonna fire you. And so the best pivot that we made in our career in music, in my opinion, is learning how to service music enough and the artists enough to make it worth being business partners with the artists. And so now we're business partners through owning a label and owning the music with them.
Gotcha.
And so for us, that's been like, I'd say like the best decision that we've made. And I credit like my genius business partners for that. The way that I draw it out and that I explain to even like my talent and our clients is like, hey dude, like I'm just the dude in the car with you. Like I'm the dude in the car with you. I'm in the studio with you. You know, I'll be at your music videos. I'm your guy. My business partner, Raf Luzi, he's like the air control. He's like the mastermind of music. And then Andrew Alvarado, who you've met, he's like the freeway. He makes sure that the car is running. Like he makes sure everybody gets paid. He keeps me and Raf out of jail. Like that's essentially the way that I paint it.
That is so true of you guys' dynamic.
Yeah.
Where like I imagine whenever you guys are together that he's like, okay, and we have to be there at this time, and we have to talk to this person, and we have to do this, and then this has to go this way, in and you're like, what's up, everybody? Yeah. I'm here for the vibes. And I feel like you guys like balance each other out.
Yeah, dude, no, he's awesome. I mean, he's my best friend in the whole world. I mean, mm-hmm. I worked with him for like almost 15 years now. So, or like, I think 12 years. But yeah, no, that's what it is, you know, and I would hate to fucking work with me, you know, but somehow he's here, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Raf too, he's a supervisionary and stuff. So like I'm in the car with the artist. He has the supervision on music. I've completely trusted that to them. In terms of like DigiCult, and that's where we manage talent. So in DigiCult, it's been a little bit of a blessing recently because of all the, and not to get into it too much, but all the bop wars and, you know, all the like, all the drama and all the girls like canceling each other for doing things a certain way. Mm. We've always positioned ourselves as like, hey, listen, we are going to work with people that want to do something outside of OnlyFans, mm-hmm. that want to do YouTube, that want to pursue streaming, that want to be like a real content creator. And gone are the days where you could just turn on the camera and, no disrespect, be hot and just make money, you know, like that. That is an ancient business model. And so what we're focused on is we're really focused on the people that want to have a future in terms of like being a real content creator and drawing a real audience, because there's always going to be somebody that's going to go more viral than you. There's always going to be, you know, ups and downs in traffic, but to really, really build that real fan base, go figure, if you treat women like real creators, they're going to make real fucking money. You know? So that's kind of like our position in the market now. And so but here's the thing, we've been saying that. And so now you're seeing, you know, your run of the mill mainstream. And when I say bot, I don't mean in a disrespectful way. I just mean it in like the way that the internet's labeled it. Like your run of the mill mainstream OnlyFans creator is now making gym content. They're now cooking. They are now, you know, trying to IRL live stream because everybody's come to the realization like, oh shit, like these people have to start speaking. Or people have to start getting to know them for them to make the money that they're used to making. And so we're just kind of like hilariously put in this position where like, well, like, what do you want to do? Do you want to start a YouTube channel? Great. We have editors because I've been managing YouTube for a decade and I have really, really good, a really good team that understands your business beyond whatever you need to do on OnlyFans. Mm-hmm. And so we've been positioned that. I think we've been positioned in a good way. And then the people that listened, like closed their eyes and listened, like for example, Raven, right? Like Raven Grimm and like these people that just close their eyes and listen, like you turn around, you're all of a sudden like, boom, big YouTube channel, you know, big traffic. Now their opportunities are beyond even some stuff within our scope. Now we partner up with even other agents to get even bigger opportunities. So that's just kind of like the way I see it. So to answer the question in management, like management is tough. You know, I encourage everybody that is interested in management or is interested in seeking a manager to really seek a business partner and somebody that is really willing to understand the business as it is now and leave them to understand what the business is going to be 5 years from now. So that you could continue to do all the cool things that you want to do. That's really like what you should look for in a relationship. And so with that being said, in music, we're actually business partners. Like we're not just taking a cut. We are owners with you. We are both in the same car. If this shit crashes, we're crashing together. You know? Yeah. So, but with OnlyFans, there's a lot more flexibility and, you know, people can leave and it is what it is. It's part of the industry. So, yeah.
What about, in the artists that you are looking to partner with on the record label, what type of music are you looking for? What type of musicians this qualities do they need to have?
Yeah, this is where my business partners give me a lot, not hate, but you know, like this is where I don't know shit. You know, I don't know shit, and I'm not the person to make that decision most of the time because I really like the music process. And so I really want to sign music that I like or that I could help finish, where my business partners are in the business of, we want to work with someone that we could help succeed. So like, for example, it's not, and this is a really good observation from their part, just because I have money now and I have all the time in the world, it doesn't mean that I can take somebody that's like, you know, 20 years old And I could be like, oh, dude, let's make the best music you could possibly make and then keep them broke for the rest of their life just because I wanted to show off that I work with the most talented person. Mm. And so there's so much to music and being a content creator that like the marketing has to be right. The packaging has to be right. And there's so much that goes into actually making music because nobody makes money from music. It's very hard to make money from music. There's only 24, like, for example, a statistic that's very, like, searchable. There's only, like, 24,000 artists that make more than $10,000.
A year?
Yes. So that's according to, like, Spotify data. That's according to, like, the current streaming benchmarks. Exactly. So you're really talking about 24,000 people, right? In our major label, we have 13 artists and all 13 of them are above that benchmark.
Oh.
And so, when you look at it as like a couple of big colleges, that's what you have to look at it as. Mm-hmm. And that's what the major threes are. So the major three are the big labels. The big labels are like Sony, you know, Warner, Universal. Those are the big three. When someone mentions the big three, those are the big three. Mm-hmm. Underneath every single major label, there's a bunch of sub-labels. And those sub-labels have sub-labels.
Mm-hmm.
And so within those sub-labels, people give chances to artists. But the likelihood of them actually being part of that 24,000 figure is very rare.
So I've learned a lot about this specific subject very recently.
Yeah.
So I'm actually following a lot more than what I normally would. There are record labels that have partnerships with mm-hmm. larger labels.
Correct.
Right? And then they will get their options picked up,
mm-hmm.
right? Where mm-hmm. they will either continue working with the larger label or the larger label will decide that it's not working out for
Correct.
Them. Right.
Correct. Danielle yeah. DeNicola, the next music
I'm
manager,
here.
The
I'm
next
here.
Music mogul.
I'm here. I'm part of the conversation.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, no, I mean that's essentially what it is, dude. It's you know, when you're in music long enough,
mm-hmm.
Similar to when you're like in a law firm long enough, eventually you want to be partner, right?
Mm.
So when during COVID, when we were doing like a lot of marketing for the big three, that was what we wanted. At the time, we were like, here, we're doing marketing for this artist. We're doing marketing for this song. So the labels are hiring us to do that social media marketing. So for those 3 years, we were thinking, well, best case scenario is we really learn this management game and mm-hmm. we become really good managers.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the labels can give us a joint venture, which is what you referenced.
Gotcha.
So mm-hmm. it's a joint venture. So similar to like when you work at a firm for a long time, you want to be partner. That's kind of the same vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And so for all of our clients, like literally all of them, we went to them and we were like, hey, like, you know, we've produced X amount of Billboard records for you, not produced as in production, but as in like marketing wise, we've delivered really good services. How about we partner up? And all of them were basically like, no. Some of them did offer jobs to, you know, my genius partner that I mentioned, Raf Luzi. So they were like, yeah, we'll take him because he's the brain, but everybody else fuck off. Here's like 100K or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, damn, like for real? Like maybe we got to market for the labels for 5 years instead of 3 years, you know? And then we just decided, well, I mean, there's really nothing stopping us from just starting a label. And so mm-hmm. we just started our label.
Yeah, good.
And it thank God it worked, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
there could have been many multiverse scenarios where we just spent a bunch of money and you know, we're now back to doing marketing for everybody else and we mm-hmm. have to wait our turn another 5 years, et cetera. So
mm-hmm.
it just ended up working out that way.
So because you guys have such an extensive marketing background, mm-hmm. Let's say that you're a musician right now mm-hmm. and you're on social media, but you don't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your starting point, your tips for them?
Really, this is going to suck. This is going to suck. I swear this is going to suck. And by the way, guys, I'm fucking over 30. I'm 30. I'm 32. So
tell me.
Yeah. So this is
give it to me straight.
This answer is going to suck. It depends on your age range.
Uh-huh.
It depends on your genre,
mm-hmm.
and it depends on your media literacy, and not so much about the quality of your music, which is why when I referenced earlier that like, yeah, like I'm kind of one of the owners, but like my opinion's not the like, and when it comes to music, like, I will die for music. Like, I know that I'm gonna die doing music. Like, this is it for me, right? But I respect my business partners so much that I know that my opinion doesn't matter as much as theirs, because I'm always just trying to get the best song out of the room, where they are, you know, looking for what could work and what can drive results. And so, to answer the question honestly, there is always a genre, whether it's in your older brother's era, your mom's era, your grandpa's era, you can study how genres brew. And that is where you, as a young artist that is trying to put out music, should do most of your research. And so, unless you just want to put out the music that, you know, you think is going to be the music that you want out in the world. And so the question really, I'll give you, like, the better question. The better question is, like, is this person making music because they're an artist, or is this person using music as a vehicle to launch their career? A good example of that would be Rihanna, right? So, like, Rihanna, just to throw, like, a mainstream example, so I don't go into my fucking metal band, but Rihanna, for example, hasn't dropped an album in 10 years.
Yeah.
Right.
Something so, like that.
But yet Fenty, and, like, you know, she did the Super Bowl at one point. Like, she is a brand. She is an absolute brand, like, to the literal sense that she has brand partnerships all the time. And her music lives rent free in many people's hearts. But really, most of her money is not made in music. Most of her money is made throughout the surrounding adjacent industries to music. And so the same goes for many artists, like Kanye. You know, I know a lot of people hate on whatever. It is what it is. And I'm just using him as an example for the business sense of it, is that when he screams, like, I'm a billionaire, blah, 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 he's not talking about, I made $1 billion of music. He's talking about the evaluation that Yeezy, his brand, was able to get to, and, you know, all the partnerships that that brand has been able to do. So that's an example of, you know, you could make music to raise the capital of you as a entertainer and make a lot of money and make a good living, or you could continue to be, you know, 40 and playing, you know, Midwest emo, and you'll be fine. You know, you could be a teacher, and you could tour once a year in the summer, and you could tour during spring breaks and during, you know, winter breaks, and you can probably make an additional, like, in a good band, like, I'm talking like a good band, and you could be a teacher, you could make like an additional $30,000 of income, and that's residual income in a way, and you're doing what you love. And then at one point when you guys are 50, you could take your catalog, if it's worth anything, and you could sell it for a multiple. And so what that means is, like, there's, you know, let's say you're a touring band, and, you know, you're one of the A Day to Remembers of the world, right? You're one of the A Day to Remembers of the world. And so, like, as a member, I mean, A Day to Remember is probably way bigger for this example, but, like, you know, you could be pulling like $80,000 a year as a band member, just touring. You could get some residuals from merch, and you could get your small percentage of royalty. So you could be making like $150K for 20 years. And then at the end of the road, you know, you as a band, or you as a musician, you could sell your music to one of the big ones. And they're always buying, by the way. And by the way, more buyers are coming in. And that's one of the things that is making navigating music a little difficult, because, like, now we have financial money coming in, like finance money. So you have hedge funds, you have private money coming in, and they're just like, yo, I don't understand this music shit, but I know it's printing money. Here's $10 million. Go buy this catalog, you know? And so you could do that. But it's just like, what do you want to do? Do you want to make millions? Do you want to just make the music you love? Do you want to grow a fan base? Those three questions, usually not everybody can answer in one lifetime. And you're very fortunate if you answer two of them. You'll encounter the artists that is super fucking talented, but for the love of God, they cannot fucking do a TikTok, right? they cannot. They start shaking when they're filming. You know what I mean? Like, they just can't. They just can't, right? And then you'll run into the artist that is just like the quarterback, he's the quarterback in his high school. And so he's popular in college, and it doesn't matter. He could fucking go start painting and he's going to have a fan base. And it's because they're just so magnetic and they're just used to the social dynamic. So they're going to crush it at live shows. They're going to crush it at fan base. They're going to crush it in merch. People want to be around him. Mm-hmm. Right. And then there's the people that you'll never know their face. They don't know how to do a TikTok, but their music lends itself to all the trends. So it lends itself to the Fortnite dances. It lends itself to the cosplay girls, to the thirst traps, to the gym, edits, to the edit world. And so to unlock all three, that's when you have the one. Right. So like before, you know, Chapel, and I'll use Chapel just because I know that's like a major example that I think everybody could kind of understand. But like before Chapel got all the like heat and social media because of the way she acts, da 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 da. And that might even be part of her strat. Dude, she did like 4 TikToks a day.
Oh
yes.
I didn't know that about her.
She did like 4 TikToks a day. She would sing, you know, the Pony Club. There's footage of her singing Pony Club in a fair for fucking 7 people. Okay. So like so the artist has to fucking do the work. And sometimes you land a chaperone where like they're fucking super charismatic, everybody wants to be them, they're hardworking as fuck, and they get the media literacy, they get it, like they're doing the TikToks, they're responding to fans, they're making fun of themselves, they're self-aware. And on top of that, they're fucking talented. To have that, that's the triple threat in music. It's like, bro, like you could have it. And I'm on the road to seeking that. You know, like I don't think I have that yet. There's nobody in my roster, and they all know this. Like we tell them all the time, like, dude, you're not the one. Like I don't have the artist yet that is like, okay, you're gonna be my Post Malone, you're gonna be my Chaperone, you're gonna be my one where everybody around you wants to be with you. You have the fucking talent, you have the fucking money, let's fucking conquer the world, you know. So yeah,
very interesting. lots of this things to ponder.
It's crazy, dude. It's even crazier when you're fucking 19 and you're a millionaire and you're like, fuck, dude, like what do I do now, you know? And so it's a lot of spiritual work, and this is where it gets really cheesy, and this is where my business partners want to fucking hang me. But like for me, it's a lot of spiritual work. It's right. Like, you know, because let's all go back to when we were 18, when we were 19. Okay, now, you know, there's money in the bank every single month regardless of what you do. So then like, why would I do a show?
Right.
Why would I put myself out there and like make a t-shirt and maybe nobody wants to wear it? Like, so different, there's different challenges in every stage, but you know, all that I could do and all that my business could do is learn and prepare for the one. And we're waiting for our Messiah. And when he's here, when she's here, it's gonna be fucking over for everybody, and we're gonna blow up, and I like we don't know nobody. that's what's gonna happen. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm manifesting that for you.
Oh yeah, it'll happen. It'll happen.
Are you? Do you normally work with just alternative?
No. So we started. Music? We started. So our first big like swing was hip hop. Then we went into alternative, and now we're coming. Then we went into dance music, and now we're coming back to hip hop. So some of the new artists that that my business partner and the people at our label are focused on are some hip hop acts. And so, like, I don't know. Like, I'm excited, dude. We'll see what happens.
I'm excited to see what happens as well.
Yeah.
Well, we talked a lot about music, so let's talk about content creation. If that's the type of thing you're looking for in music artists, is it similar when you're looking at content creators who want to work with you? Is there overlap, or is there a different set of parameters that you're looking for?
So with content creation and specifically in digital, the brand has been around for almost 6 years. So we're fortunate of getting a lot of word of mouth and a lot of applications. So this isn't to like flex or anything, but like we open our applications usually around Anime Expo, because that's when we get the most interest, because all of our talents like flocking and showing off who they are, you know. And we usually open them up around meetups too. So like when people meet up and stuff. So generally every time we open up applications, we get anywhere from like 150 to 300 applicants. We generally will take like calls with maybe 15 to 20% of them. And we're very selective. So I think right now the roster sits at like 20, at like maybe 20 people. And we've brought it down from 35. Mm-hmm. So right now, really, so to answer the question, that was just to set the stage. But to answer the question, we really, really are so dead ass about, I need you to do something outside of this bullshit. Like, I'm so for real, girl. Like, if you think you're gonna fucking make a video or two and make a bag, it's over. Like, it's not happening. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, I obviously show you off, you know, like, I love all that you do. Like, you're a fucking, you know, it is what it is, dog. You're a fucking bad bitch type shit. Like, you have the pod, you fucking, you travel to your you crush it in all your destinations. You do the cosplaying, but like the cosplaying, you know, like you are truly a cosplay designer, right? And so I don't know, dude. I feel like this is a very like egotistical Christmas list, bro, but I just want more yous. I want more ravens. I want more. And it doesn't have to be only cosplayers, you know, like one of my goals, this is the first time that I've said this to anybody besides, you know, my partners, that one of my goals is I want to sign like a MMA fighter or a boxer to Digicol. Like, I think that I could help, you know. It doesn't look that way because I'm fat as fuck right now, but I do Muay Thai and I love Muay Thai, and it's like one of my biggest passions.
I've been doing Muay Thai.
I know. I met your trainer and he's serious. I actually saw one of his fights.
Oh yeah,
I did. Yeah, he's good.
Shout out Gilly.
No, he's good. Yeah, and I met him when he shook my hand. I was like, all right, bro. Yeah, I got you. But yeah, no, like with the rise of like the creator fights and stuff like that, I definitely want to represent like 2-3 fighter creators, and kind of like, you know, the synergy that we have, where you have the synergy with Raven and other people in the roster, where it's like, yeah, like Digicol works with some of the big cosplay people. I want people to know that Digicol also works with like those, you know, those three MMA girls that beat the shit out of that streamer that one time, you know. Uh-huh. So like, that's my Christmas list for this year. And then, you know, I've tried, and you know, it would be great to have a musician that is also part of Digicol, but you know, I have really, really, really high hopes for Cece. So Cece is actually learning how to DJ and she's doing great.
Really?
Yeah. So she's.
I remember she had she brought it to the house.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the first time people are hearing it here. But yeah, like, I mean, she's posted a couple clips. But yeah, my goal with Cece is just, you know, for her to actually be a DJ, start booking her for shows, and you know, build like a whole like cosplay community around her with DJing. Mm-hmm. And then who knows, like sometimes DJs start producing music, and then once she crosses there, bro, I mean, I have everything, I have all the tools that she needs, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, vicariously through you, I'm learning a little bit about voice acting and stuff. Like, I don't know anything about that world other than, you know, you want to be a good actor.
Yeah.
Generally, you know. Uh-huh. It translates.
Yeah.
You know. Uh-huh. So I'm I don't know, bro. And this isn't like a glazed Daniel hour either, but I'm just really, really excited for the thing that you're doing, because I do show you guys off, you know. So like when someone comes in, they're interested, and we let them know, hey, like right now is not the time, it's really easy for them to be like, I understand, because I just have to show them a couple of profiles and they're like, oh yeah, I get it, it's not my time at Digicol right now. Yeah.
Voice acting is so interesting, because the thing that I've learned the most is that when you talk about voice acting, a lot of people are like, oh, so you do impressions. Mm-hmm. Is like the number one thing. Mm-hmm. That I have heard. And I am always like, that's actually so incredibly not true. Like, mm-hmm. I can't do one impression to save my whole life. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I'm in like, I don't know, 7 or 8 games on Steam now.
That's insane.
And it's just because you can like deliver a believable performance,
right,
as opposed to like mimic somebody else.
Right.
But that's really hard to explain.
Right.
to someone who doesn't really know about the industry?
It's because when people think about acting, they think that someone's going to tell you, hey, act hungry. Hey, act sad. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not acting. And acting isn't lying either. You know, it's really trying your best to find the purpose of this character in the circumstances that they're in, you know.
Right.
Like I was a super Stanislavski glazer in college, you know, because when I had to go into film and stuff, I had to take acting. Mm-hmm. So like once I figured out like the whole Stanislavski thing, I was like, dude, isn't all of life this way? Like life, you should have your big mission maybe every 3 months and then you'd be somewhere in life, you mm-hmm. know. And I have done that. Like I have switched my fucking life. Like I was one of those you know, hippie kids that never wanted to drive, and you know, I was like, yo, you know what, dude, in 3 months I'm gonna get my fucking license, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. Like I got my license late in life, bro. I was like 21.
Oh yeah,
late in life. Yeah,
I think it's important to have a main quest.
Exactly.
It drives you.
Exactly.
Like you wake up passionate, you're mm-hmm. like, this is what I'm working towards, I'm very excited about doing it and finishing it and accomplishing it,
right?
If it's and to make sure that it's like a tangible goal, like you said, like right. getting a license is something that you can accomplish, but like right. a lot of people will be like, I just want to be happy, or like I just want and it's like, when does that
yeah.
who decides when that
right
is happening?
The key to everything is some super cheese ball shit. The key to everything is asking the better question.
Mm.
And the best directors that I've come across in my lifetime are the people that ask the best questions, and that usually lead with as ifs.
Mm.
So I want you to do this as if this is happening. What would you do if this happened? And so when you think of that as yourself, like self-coaching, it's like, well, what would I do if this catastrophe happened? Or what would I do if I was able to achieve this? And then once you realize like, wait, I'm really doing a lot of side questing because I'm scared of what I might do after I achieve that goal.
Mm.
And so a lot of the times, you know, especially if you're a fucking Pokemon player, I'm looking at you. You think that, you know, just because you fought all the Pokemon around and then by the time you met the gym leader, he was like weak as fuck because you're like beefed up. Yeah, I know you think that's how life is, but no, like life will always have tragedy, regardless of how much money you're making, regardless of like where you are in life. Like that is the whole point.
Mm.
It, no matter how well off you think you are, tragedy is there for you. It's there for your character development, and it's there for the challenge. Because if you didn't have that challenge, that's when all of this abundance becomes toxic.
Mm-hmm.
All of this money you're sitting on, all of this time you're sitting on. Think about sitting on all that free time and all that money, like, and you don't really have a purpose, or you don't know what you're doing next. That's when it gets really like weird. And that's when you run into those like rich people in LA that are fucking depressed. Like they fucking hate everything. It's like, bro, like I want to be you. And then you're like, wait, I don't. After like one dinner, you're like, oh shit, I don't want to be. You know what I mean?
The grass is not always greener.
Hey man, it's not, but it is. You know,
it is. It can be.
It can be.
It can be.
It can be.
Do you think to that effect that the concept of comparison is the thief of joy is very.
Yeah, but sometimes you got to do it. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's so like, you know, being sad, being like feeling insecure, like all of that stuff is actually like, bro, it's good.
Because it drives you.
I know you can't tell. You know, I probably look 6 foot right now because I'm sitting down, but hey, as a short king, right?
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like I'm 5'0", right?
Mm-hmm.
So like I my insecurity of not being able to defend myself is what made me so good at martial arts.
Mm.
And so like jiu-jitsu became trendy when I was a teenager. So
I remember that era.
Yeah, so like when I was 16, I got choked out by a wrestler. And I was like, I need to know everything you're doing, because I was such a hotshot like striker, and I got choked out, and I was like, I just need to know. I gotta know all this shit. And that's when I fell in love with a little bit of jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing about jiu-jitsu coming into my life when I was 16 is that the whole message of jiu-jitsu is it doesn't really matter how big you are or how small you are, because you know, the Gracies, they were smaller dudes from Brazil that would choke out anybody. And so your insecurities are only there to show you what you could work on. And you have the option to decide if you want to compete there or not. And you don't have to compete with everybody. So that's actually the smarter, more clever way of moving about it. It's like, hey, this dude with a Ferrari pulled up next to my dad car.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on paper, I could be more rich than the guy. But that's my insecurity thinking that. It's like, oh, well, you know, this dude spent all his money on a fucking Ferrari and a Lamborghini, but he's not thinking about, you know, all the things I'm thinking about. And I'm probably more rich than him on paper. You know what I mean? Like, so that's my insecurity. But then, okay, cool. So, all right, I might feel a little insecure because this dude just mogged the shit out of my car. But now here's the choice, multiple choice. Cool. You're insecure about it? Handle it. Get a cool car. It might help. Who knows? Who actually knows? Okay, do you want to compete here? No, I shouldn't. Why? Well, because I actually really should help this artist go on tour. I should help finish this. I got to do this. This is what's going on. Then you don't need to compete with the cool car.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that children, like, now this is some hard old head shit. But yeah, I think children really helps with that, you know? So it's like, you know, before I had a kid, I had plans of getting like some fuck you car.
Yeah.
But like my two seater would be fucking useless for my daughter, right?
Right.
And I already have I was already allowed to have a paranoia car. I won't dox my car, but basically my car is like an all terrain, like zombie apocalypse car. And that's my like paranoia car, like end of the world conspiracy car, zombie ready car.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So I was already allowed to play. Like my wife already let me play. So I can't have the paranoia car. That's unpractical and have a fuck you sports car.
Right.
So then I was like, yeah, it's all good. I'll have the dad car. It is what it is. Sometimes a Lamborghini and a Ferrari will park next to me and I'll just tell myself, oh, it's fucking rented, you know? But uh-huh. I feel like, you know, insecurities are good, man. It's if you feel insecure about something, you have the choice to recognize why, handle it, or decide if you want to compete, and recognize that you don't get to compete in everything in this lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes you fucking awesome. That makes you awesome, bro, because there's nothing wrong with being a fan. You could be a fan of cosplayers. You could be a fan of actors. You could be a fan of musicians. You could be a fan of so many things. Like, let people have their thing so that you can enjoy it more. You don't have to just because someone's faster at driving than you, you're not going to be a NASCAR driver,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
So like, and I can't cosplay, bro. Like, I would get kicked out of cons. They would be like, yo, sir, there are children here.
I disagree.
There are children here.
I disagree. Cosplay is for everyone.
I'm dead.
Yeah. I had a question. What was it? Where'd it go?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What are you dressing up as in Anime Expo this year?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I am in a Pokemon group. I know that.
Mm-hmm.
I had plans and I don't remember what they were at this moment in time. But I am working on fixing up Blonde Blazer from Dispatch. And I'm working on fixing up... something. Doing something else for this upcoming weekend.
But you're doing something.
I am doing. Sonya Blade,
mm-hmm.
Mortal Kombat.
Nice.
Since for the
oh
new
yeah,
movie.
The game came out. Yeah. Right. Oh no, the movie came out.
Yeah.
Right. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Was it good? I didn't see it.
I didn't see it either.
All right. It's all right. All right, but
it's all right.
Yeah, we should watch it. Yeah, but I'm telling you, bro, fighting, dude. If you start doing Muay Thai seriously, bro, it's fucking wraps. It's over.
Really?
Oh yeah, dude. That'd be crazy.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
You might have to. Dude, because that would be crazy. We could set up like a cosplay Muay Thai event. Similar like to the, you know, to the boxing thing last year.
Yeah, but does Sonya Blade do Muay Thai? Or does, we have to find a character that does Muay Thai. Yeah, we have to find a
character that does Muay Thai. Well, most of them are men. Like Lee Sin from League of Legends. I think he's Muay Thai.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know any fictional Muay Thai.
I don't know if this is true or not, mm-hmm. but in my head, any blonde white character in a fighting game is a boxer.
You know what?
I think they're all boxers.
Kind of, yeah, right? Wait, what's Cammy? Is Cammy a boxer?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay.
Cammy seems European to me, though.
She has to be Russian. She's British? No way. Brits are not built like that. No, no disrespect. Yeah, no disrespect.
Anyway, I remember my question.
Okay, sorry.
What does, as a content creator, what are the warning signs that a management company or agency is bad? What are the red flags that people should look out for?
That's a little vague, but I guess it's hard to know until you're in there. That's a fucked up part.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has a cool ass website and everybody has the cool like couple creators that they say, you know, as soon as you sign, like, this creator is going to show up to your house and do your laundry. And I promise they're going to love you.
So
you
overpromising, so, like, red flag.
Yeah, I guess so. But I guess sometimes this used to be the recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, sometimes you could get lucky. Like, for example, some agencies or management companies, like, they will have 300, 500 creators. And you don't know that until you're in there. Or sometimes they flex it like they're proud of it. But you have to take into account that sometimes that's just impossible.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone has 300 to 500 creators, this is what I tell creators that they need to do. All that means is that in the next 2 years of your life, you are going to learn politics. And you're going to learn the entertainment side of politics. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're hot and you're already making money, like if your content is already monetized, you're already hot, you're already like making a name for yourself and you're already making a living, you should generally look for a smaller company that can pay more attention to what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing about being with the big company is that they have a lot of leverage when they do big deals. So if they are saying, hey, out of our 300, 150 of you got selected to do this one thing, that's cool. Or if you become really good at politicking and get really close with the higher-ups and the content creators that are also prioritized, then you could be the poster. Generally, when someone has like 300 or 500 content creators, really it's only like 30, 50 of them that are getting like that type of attention.
Yeah.
If you're in that pool, there's nothing.
Small fish, big pond.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong. You know, like you won't even recognize that there's anything wrong or that you're leaving money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I like to say, because like sometimes, yeah, like that was a dead giveaway. Like, oh, it's a huge fucking agency or management company. And they have a shit ton of people.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're generally bad. But then, you know, you have the CAAs of the world and the UTAs of the world and like the WMEs of the world where they represent like 900 people. And, you know, those are the people that are on TV every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I used to be on the camp where like the more that they have, the more fucked you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then now recently I realized like, huh, it really is just a game of relationships.
Mm.
So as long as you have a good relationship with those people, you'll be fine. Whereas with me, like, dude, I haven't met fucking, in DigiCult specifically, I haven't met like fucking 40% of the roster, like ever. Like I have people in the UK that I'll never meet. I have people, you know, like I have talent in Sweden. I have talent in Brazil that I'll never meet.
Mm-hmm.
Canada that I'll never meet, right? So it's like, and just because I don't have a relationship with them, it doesn't mean I'm not making the money. They're making a fuck ton of money. You know what I mean? So, but that's because it's a smaller organization and we can give you more attention, you know? So
mm-hmm.
I guess that's the cool thing, is that when you're with a small org that does what they're supposed to do and they deliver on the things that they promise, you don't really have to be afraid of where your position is in the company. You don't have to be friends with anybody. You don't have to show up to the fucking mingles, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You can just depend on the company. But when you're in a big fucking building, you bet your ass you better have a fucking person in there that is vouching for you every fucking step of the way.
Right.
And in music, those are your A&Rs. So
yeah.
In the building, you know, the A&R that signed you, generally you want to follow him around and you want him to know everything that you're up to and what you're gonna do and how you're doing it, so that when they're stopped in the hallway and they're asked, hey, what do you think about so and so? They know exactly what to say, and they're not, oh, let me get back to you on that and let me check the stats. Like, no, no. You, when it's a big building, you want that person or a few people in there or their top talent to always be able to vouch for you, to be included in the cool things.
Yeah. I've heard that as well when it comes to voice acting. If you are in an agency that's very, very big, sometimes you won't get as many opportunities because all of the auditions are going to other people.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm there with you.
Yeah.
I'm also looking for voice acting agencies right now. So I'm...
Get on it.
I'm doing my research.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. We're gonna transition to our Patreon portion, and I have some more questions to unpack the management section of content creation when we switch over. But before we do that, can you let everybody know where to find you online and what you have coming up?
Sure. Well, thank you. This was sick. Always wanted to be here. Okay.
Long time coming.
I asked 8 times and they were afraid to let me on every single time. Nah, but thanks. Thanks for listening, guys. Ursus Magana on everything. URSUSMAGANA. And then for my businessy like rants, that's Made It or Ursus Made It. But yeah, just if you have some cool music, some cool artists that you guys are listening to, please. DM them to me. I check all the DMs. I can't wait to hear your music.
So I know you love Yu-Gi-Oh!
I love Yu-Gi-Oh!
I have a very important question for you.
Let's do it.
Dividing the masses.
Okay.
Do you think that when Kaiba threatened to walk off the edge of that cliff if Yugi didn't let him win? Was that big dick energy or was that small dick energy?
I think